You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Now, from how the macroscopic emerges from the microscopic, to the even bigger picture of how absolutely everything arises, reporter Sophie Hebden talks to FQXI's Sean Carroll, a cosmologist at Caltech, who talks first about his research looking into how space and time might come out from quantum theory, and then discusses his new book, which makes the case that life, meaning, and the universe itself will one day be completely explained by science.
Sean Carroll is a theoretical physicist based at the California Institute of Technology, working on questions relating to emergence, how the deepest levels of reality are connected to higher levels of behaviour we see in the world around us. He wants to explain the existence of space and time using just quantum physics. His work is addressing the misfit between Einstein's theory of general relativity, which describes space-time as a fabric that bends and stretches according to objects' masses, and quantum physics. I spoke to him via Skype and asked him about the problem he is focusing on.
So, you know, we talk about quantum mechanics a lot. People have a vague idea that it has something to do with probabilities and uncertainty and microscopic physics and atoms and so forth. But really, it's a completely different way of thinking about what the world is. Quantum mechanics replaced classical physics, and classical physics, a la Isaac Newton, says the world is made out of stuff that basically, roughly speaking, has a position and a momentum. So in quantum mechanics, it's not at all like that. We have things called wave functions or quantum states, and they are elements of this big space called Hilbert space. And that's just, we don't need to go into the details, but that's where the wave functions live. And because we are human beings, we tend to think of the world as fundamentally classical, even though we know it's not, because we're professional physicists who do quantum mechanics. So when we construct quantum mechanical theories, we start with some classical theory that could have been true had Newton been right, and then we do what is called quantizing that. So instead of having a position at every moment in time, you have a wave function that tells you the probability that you will see it. So our attitude, my attitude and my students right now, is to sort of not do it that way. We want to start with the quantum mechanical world, with the world as a wave function in Hilbert space. And we want to ask the question, given this kind of wave function we have, given how it behaves, given how it looks when you divide it up in different ways, what does it resemble classically? Could someone just give you a wave function, you look at it and go, oh, I know, that is an electron moving in a three-dimensional space or something like that? Can you derive space and time themselves just from the quantum mechanical wave function? So for us, you know, there's been this set of results in the last 5 or 10 years in quantum gravity that relate the geometry of space-time, which is what Einstein explained to us we interpret as gravity. General relativity says gravity is the curvature of space-time, relating that to entanglement in a quantum state. Yeah. And increasingly, there's this hint, many interesting hints, that if you have some quantum mechanical system, from the way that different parts of the system are entangled with each other, we can actually infer something like the geometry of space-time itself. So what you and I think of as curved space, gravity, can actually come emerging directly from the entanglement structure of the quantum state of the universe. And if that's true, that's like a very big hint about why the world looks the particular way it does.
So what's entangled in order to produce... So have you got mass entangled in order to produce gravity?
Well, the wonderful thing, and this is what really kind of makes it challenging to think about this, is there is no what. You know, there is no thing. Like when you say, is it mass? Is it particles? Is it fields? For us, all of that is just a relic of the old days when we thought that classical physics was ruling the day. There is nothing but the wave function in our... approach. Yeah. So you want to say, well, the wave function of what? And our answer is no. don't ask that. The question is, here is a wave function. What different ways can it look to us? You know, how does it sort of manifest itself in some limit as you look at a lot of it? So some sort of big classical or semi-classical macroscopic object. So it's not, you know, the entanglement between particles or anything like that. It's an entanglement between different parts of the wave function. And then you ask, what kinds of entanglement are necessary if you just say, ah, I interpret that as a particle moving through space?
Well, what have you achieved so far, and what are you hoping to achieve?
The thing that I'm most excited about right this minute, the paper I'm trying to finish, is we call it deriving space from Hilbert space. So, forgetting about gravity for the moment and all the difficulties, let's just start with a wave function and say, like, how many dimensions of space does that wave function live in? Like, the wave function itself is some huge dimensional vector space, but does it look like a particle moving in one dimension or two dimensions or three dimensions? And we have this conjecture that by looking at the mutual information between different parts of the quantum wave function, we can actually reconstruct some underlying geometry to space itself. The mutual information is basically a way of saying how entangled two different parts of Hilbert space really are. And the nice thing about this is you're not relying on any background space-time, no pre-existing structures, no asymptotic boundary conditions, like nothing is given to you from outside. You're really just starting from the wave function and getting space out of it. And there's even a hint that if you start with that and then poke it a little bit, you know, perturb the state a little bit, then you get a non-flat geometry, and it looks like it might obey something like Einstein's equations for gravity. There's an enormous amount of work to be done before we could say anything like that with any confidence, but that's the kind of huge ambition that we have in front of us.
Carroll is used to setting his sights big. Not only has he published widely in theoretical physics and cosmology, he is also a hugely successful communicator and relishes bringing physics to the masses. He is known for his blogging, television appearances, TED Talk about the multiverse, which has more than 1.4 million hits, and popular books. His third popular science book, The Big Picture, is published in the US this month. It will be launched in the UK in September. It's an unashamed sales pitch for naturalism, or Carroll's brand of it, called poetic naturalism. He told me what he was aiming for.
Yeah, so this is a hilariously overly ambitious book, and I'm the first to admit that before anyone else in the audience wants to point it out. The subtitle is On the Origins of Life, Meaning, and the Universe Itself. So modesty is not one of the shortcomings of the book. What it's really trying to do is to put things together, to not necessarily to answer every question you might have, but to make the case that every question will be answerable in the framework of science, naturalism. So I do a lot of philosophy in the book, talking about how everyday notions of cause and purpose are perfectly sensible and useful, but they're not fundamentals. They're emergent, just like we were talking about space-time being emergent. Cause and effect is emergent in the macroscopic world. So most of the book, 90% of it, is devoted to that, and then 10% is devoted to saying, and that's okay. You shouldn't feel, you know, existential despair just because we obey the laws of physics. Yeah. And we also don't have any guidance from outside about how to live a good life, but again, that's okay. We have the ability to make choices about how to live a good life, and that's all we ever had and all we really need.
It's a huge book, and Carroll skillfully holds our hands through all 400-plus pages, with simple, lucid writing and helpful analogies. But whilst he is polite about other views, unless you agree that physics is all you need for finding meaning in life, you may find some of the more evangelical sections hard-going. The book will join the science versus religion battleground as a kind of manifesto for poetic naturalism. I found the more preachy parts come towards the end of the book, in the caring section, and reading them I felt a strange sort of awkward gap open up, like you've wandered into a self-help group and you're being watched until you conform to what's expected of you. Even so, it's a great read. My personal favourite parts were the forays into history of science through the eyes of lesser-known characters, such as Princess Elizabeth of Bohemia, whose persistent rational lines of questioning influenced Descartes. The whole book exudes Carroll's unique confidence and openness about his worldviews, which to a reserved Brit is rather appealing. When I asked him what he felt were his strongest skills, he responded with characteristic charm.
If you compare me to the best physicist in the world, I'm certainly not the best physicist in the world. If you compare me to the best philosophers in the world, I'm not the best philosopher in the world, even the philosopher of physics. But maybe I know more physics than most philosophers, and maybe I know more philosophy than most physicists, and I'm trying to learn more biology and complexity theory to mix that in there also. And I think it all matters. I think that, you know, I can take insights from these different areas and bring them back.
Thanks to Sean Carroll for talking with reporter Sophie Hebden. You'll find a link to his ambitious new book, The Big Picture, on the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast. And stay tuned to the community site for an article by Sophie discussing Carroll's work in more depth, coming soon.
That's all we have time for in this edition. Thank you once again to Anthony Aguirre, Catalina Curzianu, Karin Pikama, Sean Carroll, and Sophie Hebden.
As usual, you can reach us by email at podcast@fqxi.org or on Twitter at FQXI.
She's been Zia Morali.
And he's been Brendan Foster. I'm off to shoot nano-sized pieces of FQXI's 10th birthday cake towards Alpha Centauri.
And I'm going to hide in a mountain in Italy and spontaneously decay.